Right. You're listening to the Chromatters Radio Podcast. This is TQ4, and I have with me today Elvis Canaveral. We're going to have a little bit of a different format and talk about some interaction designs. Pulled them out of the vault, put them back up on the new server, and what we're listening to now is the project is called Bubble. Elvis Canaveral, welcome to Wishing Star Studio. Normally we have an ambient music jam prior to the podcast, but this is down to business. So
I had a fantastic Waylon Jennings musical interlude leading me on my way here today.
Yeah, Outlaws are back. Wheeler. Right?
Yeah. There was the great tale of Waylon Jennings' song that opens up. The song is about the night they spent protecting you from me. And it was about how the their outlaw image had... Well, don't you think this outlaw bit's gotten out of hand? Because when the band was playing in New York State, the sheriff's hearing that these outlaws were in town sent an entire posse of sheriffs, filled up the room a la Blues Brothers, and just arrested them on stage for being outlaws. And, you know, it was a big part of, you know, when you operate in the public, you have a fiction suit, you have a public persona. If you're adept at it, it's its own thing, and you keep it separate from the artist itself. But within that fiction suit, you can get things done in a much more efficient manner because that fiction suit has the right value system to get a particular work done. David Bowie's a great example of it. He would inhabit a character, Ziggy Stardust, for example. You know, vain, rock, you know, glam, everything that he needed to be at that time. But he knew that was not a sustainable thing. That would burn out. So he did Ziggy, and then he put Ziggy away and then crawled into a new fiction suit for the next album. Now, I have a friend of mine. Her father was the lawyer of Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson that helped break him from the Nashville Network. He was called the Outlawyer. But the issues that you deal with when you allow if you don't have that firewall of protection between your public persona and your personal persona, your kind of true center self, as I refer to it as, if you don't achieve a balance and a knowledge of that, it can get really dangerous because you don't know how to separate your worlds, and it's very hard to be close to someone if you're always in character.
Well, you know, no one is ever surprised by a minivan in the right lane on the freeway going the speed limit. So it just nullifies so much conflict and contention.
Yeah.
No one's wondering what a guy is up to if he's wearing spandex and riding a road bike with a helmet.
Yeah.
That's perfectly normal. It's nothing to notice. It's no one to think about. Now, I think, what do you think of this idea that wearing black all the time is actually a humble statement because you're saying, look at me, remember me?
Yeah, well, it depends on the context. I mean, for me, depending on when in my life, I had different reasons for wearing black. Well, I always wanted to wear black when I was young, and my mother allowed me to wear black. But my grandmother, trying to, you know, my mother passed away when I was 16, and I had my grandparents as a regular care, my stable center. But I was told I couldn't wear black t-shirts to school, and this was high school, because it was there was concern at the time about devil worship. There was concern about the time about, you know, stoners.
Now parents would be thrilled that they were worshiping
exactly.
something.
Well, and my mother taught me how to play Dungeons and Dragons in the first grade, and it was so that she would have somebody to play with, you know.
That sounds like a cool grandma. Were they old hippies?
Well, no, that was the mom. The grandparents, my grandmother converted to Catholicism when she married my grandfather, and she took to it good. So the fear of devil worshiping made D&D kind of a questionable thing in our house, and there was no way I was going to be able to wear a black rock shirt. Like I remember one year I had an Iron Maiden shirt. And it was class. It was school photos time, and I'm wearing my Maiden. And when the photos come back, you know, they blacked out the shirt. It's like, oh, Maiden. So for me, you know, being able to wear when I was able to socially engineer the logistics for me to be able to wear black. That was a victory for me, and it happened when I was 16, because I transferred high schools, and I was going to a new high school because I had a better theater, and because of my involvement in theater and technical theater, I had to wear black, and so now I was wearing black for work, and for me that was a big kind of point of change where black. By wearing the black, it allowed me to have ownership of it. You know, I at that point, I kind of, it was the same year that my mother passed away. So I kind of, after a long bout of cancer, so I knew I'm going to be coming kind of into this. And is a moment of independence and declaration. And then for, 25 years, it was my occupational clothing, in both doing stage work and my religious work. So I often just wear my priest collar. But I also...
You a priest?
Oh, I have many, many, many religious titles. But I was raised Catholic, and I seriously considered becoming a Catholic priest and following that track for a while, probably through the Jesuit order.
My grandma said I should think about that. Maybe she knew something about me that I didn't know at the time.
Well, it depends on which gang you're kind of hanging with. And, you know, I researched, you know, the groups within there. And my problem is I researched to the point that I no longer had structure in the faith of the structure of the church. So I couldn't go into it. The same reason I couldn't go into the military. I am not easily broken. And why go through that stress? I pursued my own path, and you know, through my own experience and research and studies. And what I do is I have a new deeply held belief system every month. I have a benefit corporation for the purposes of Illumination named Shutterbooks Corporation, specific benefit corporation. We have a service called Cult of the Month, which is our monthly it's a monthly subscription service where all our subscribers get enrolled into a new religion or belief system on the 23rd of every month. The July Cult of the Month, Zazuzaz, is a belief system built on the works of Cab Calloway, and it used the Blues Brothers as its holy gospel.
Oh, nice. Have you seen Oingo Boingo's movie, The Forbidden Zone?
No. That sounds like...
Danny Elfman is a super awesome That Oingo Boingo was basically a Cab Calloway tribute band when they started.
I did not know that. Zazu Zaz is a Cab Calloway song, and as my daughter and I were researching.
And then you touch below the tentacles to move.
Nice.
I'm not completely sold on the physics. It's not working as it needs to be a little stronger.
Yeah.
The paddles are hard to get to really get action. It's not. You can tell it's not a very good board design. It's just purely a prototype of the. But that could be made at any scale. With any size, because there's a couple of different ways the tentacles move, like they have a certain range of motion and a certain number of nodes that causes the physics to happen. And they can be synchronized and triggered. So it's sort of a kind of a API to create a tentacle game.
I like the idea of a pinball game with flipper tentacles.
And now with 3D printing, you could make a nice silicon thing with use the silicon to mimic, just engineer it to mimic the actual.
Yeah, over at a
movement and physics.
You may not even have to go that complicated, at least for the initial prototype.
Well, I mean, digital is easy, but like if there's like a real world tie-in, that's super sexy.
Over at Can Can Wonderland in St. Paul, in the back electronic arcade, in the very corner is a machine called Disco Fever. It's a 1978 solid state machine, and they replaced the regular flippers on it with these slightly curved flippers, and it has kind of a highlight.
So you get a spin.
You get a lot of extra whip out of there, and that's a shape that I've been looking at. And the nice thing about it is that it's a static shape for at least initial design. When you're making something for a physical pinball, especially something like the flippers, that's got to be prepared to get hit millions of times.
Did you ever see Existence?
I believe I have.
Cronenberg?
Yeah.
So that had this kind of weird biotech, like this game controller that had like nipples instead of joysticks, and it was just like really creepy alien-looking humanoid thing.
Yeah.
but like if you could make a pinball game that seemed like a underwater environment, with like cuttlefish and things like that, that'd be so wicked.
My family has a big connection to the cephalopods. My wife Stephanie her nickname is Cephalopod. When she was pregnant with our little one, pre-naming the name was Squidlet. So, and we made our announcements wearing giant squid hats, which are the official papal garb of Cult of the Month.
Yeah, I there needs to be a game about the flamboyant cuttlefish. That thing is just so wicked looking.
Yeah, and the nice thing about doing digital, if you do a digital pinball, you can really prototype it.
Are you ready to talk about your digital pinball idea?
I have so many. Which one? but the answer is always yes. I think we should talk about Elvis Canaveral's Pinball Dojo. Which is very relevant to this kind of format. And what it would be is a dojo to teach the way of pin combo, which is the martial arts approach to pinball.
This is based on, I mean, there's specific code that handles the animation, and then they have a simplified physics model outside of that that's somewhat based on the animation too, so that's unified. And then there's just kind of a data file that creates the game board.
Yeah.
So it's like it's anyone could code an object to animate to work in this system, and then could also have a level creator very easy to build. So you could have, I mean, imagine a pinball game where you know, you put in 50 cents and you get to make your own board.
And then I'm very much for...
compete with your friends on it or something.
Yeah, I'm very much for the what I call the Minecraft approach to pinball design.
Yeah,
figure out some basic template, because there are a great number of basic templates and a basic story structure that modern pinball games lay out, and that you can fill in like a Mad Lib. You can link it to somebody's Facebook account, and suddenly they would have a pinball machine that is themed after whatever it is that they have an interest in, you know, because it would be able to check out their
nice
likes.
Idea.
So, yeah.
Let me show you something. It's not technically, I guess you wouldn't call it unreleased, but
I would want to make a pinball game out of that. I would like to use for the initial use a kind of a traditional pinball structure so people know what they're getting to, but instead of a pinball machine is a rigid thing. What I would like to do is have a squishy pinball, you know, a very using the movements of the cephalopod and the idea of suctions and texture to it.
Imagine that was like a foot across and 3 feet long.
That'd be sweet.
And you had a million of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Would that be the funnest thing in the world? Yeah. And plus, if you had, you know, if there's a bed of it, kids could play on these big dangerous things they would build. And they would fall off. I think at worst you could maybe break your collarbone if you fell onto sort of an array of MDF bricks. I don't think you would. I mean, you could still get hurt, but I mean, look at the metal and chain things they play with now. It's crazy too.
I also think of the fun if instead of being flat, these were little suction cups.
But, you know, if you could, if I had 1,000 of those, like at the 1 foot size, I'd make a really wicked cool castle.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of which, can you, let me show you this demo. Hit this with your iPhone camera and it should bring up a link.
Oh, there. Oh, okay. I thought it was a notification.
Yeah, it's kind of new, but the workflow is really slick. Yeah, maybe close it and open it again, and then it's a little wonky, but my scanner app has its own browser, and its browser doesn't support the technology for the AR. So allow the camera.
Oh wow, that is very cool.
there's a lot of issues with cameras and geometry and 3D. It goes on forever. But anyway, what's possible is thrilling.
I have an idea for kind of interacting with augmented reality. That the idea is the Pro-Annoia network. Pro-Annoia is the suspicion that the universe is out to help you. And the idea...
Depends on the language you use, it seems, as like the deciding factor of your luck.
Exactly. If you're going to, you know, if you're looking for something, might as well be looking for something good instead of always looking for trouble.
This is a battery drainer, so you might want to close it.
Cheers. But the idea is to work on both a macro and micro level, and the big part of it is figuring out the interface.
I think the colors represent, so it's probably a green Honda.
Not too far. I think it's blue. My wife thinks it's green. Subaru.
Okay.
I traded in the Beetle when the wife was pregnant using the first paying comedy gig that I made on Twitter.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was years ago, me and my friends were early adopters of Twitter. We used it to figure out which bar we're going to drink at. this was in the age of flip phones and such, and a friend of mine said, Chad Valentine said, hey, let's meet at the CC Club. I could really use a drink tonight. I'm convinced that all my coworkers are cyborgs. I was at my computer, so I made a Twitter account at Terminator and had it follow him. So, years later, they're rebooting the Terminator franchise. I have the Terminator handle. Came to a nicer...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And the...
You were a squatter on the Terminator.
Well, I had been approached a great number of times by a number of people, and you know, most of them just seemed like scummy people who were trying to figure out a way to get in with Mr. Schwarzenegger. But this was an actual decent guy, Ivan Asquith. He actually was the guy who put together the Veronica Mars, Reading Rainbow, and Mystery Science Theater 3000 Kickstarters.
I heard about the Reading Rainbow reboot. I used to watch that.
The woman who sings a song at the beginning did a show at the Guthrie, and my wife was like, "Will you sing the song?" And she's like, "Yes."
Hmm, this is not a compatible audio jack. I don't know what's up with that. I guess it is the sound. So there's the keys and tempos. Interacting with that'll cause another query. So it's like a radio station that plays loops.
Yeah.
And the loops have keys and tempos, and it takes, and then you also tag them to be whether they have whether it's a noise, a drone, a beat, or music. Where music and drones have a key, music and beats have a tempo, and so if you have to change between a two keys and tempos. That's the code of the visualizer. You can edit that. And so that's listening. That the inputs to that are the sound spectrum of the audio that you're playing. So those are the two audio channels that are playing, and you can see the frequency spectrum. Yeah, it's not all interactive.
I want to play with everything.
If you click on the post, you can see each WordPress post has four images, four audio loops, and then the audio loops are tagged to be drone. So a good post will have a drone, a noise, music, and a beat, so it can crossfade. So if you have to go between foreign keys and tempos, you can crossfade with the noise at least. You know, if you're changing keys, you can crossfade with drones. Or no, you can you can change keys while crossfading the drums. So you can have a continuous remix through all different keys and tempos of uploads. And so every hour it looks at the last hour's uploads and creates a playlist. And then if there's not enough activity, like now since no one's using the system, it just kind of does a random remix of the past.
What I would love to do is to be able to have this source, for example, from a Twitter feed, the images and or sound files in there, and kind of allow myself to record a kind of mashup of my Twitter feed of the day.
I did some testing with this education, and I talked to a music teacher who's electronic music teacher, and he's like, kids don't want to do ambient music. They just want to play rock, or, you know, they already have their tools for, you know. So I think this is just, it's really meant to be a social network for ambient music producers, and then there's this database of all these different highly meta-categorized things in different keys and tempos, so that you can query this database and create game music with different, you know, tempos, etc. And it's also doing a visualization based on the, like, remixing the posts, too. So You could have you could upload, make a bunch of posts with a certain tag for, say, a wedding, and then you would have all of the certain types of music and certain types of images. So you could kind of wrap, have sort of a media ambient environment around your event through, and then you could have, like, you know, the house music at the reception would still have the same whatever Irish theme as the ambient music in the garden.
Being able to link it to a hashtag and just kind of, if there, while that there is a interactive kind of feature to it, being able to have kind of a auto mode would be able to allow anybody to create a kind of odd media using Twitter itself.
Yeah, I'm in favor of using Twitter as a database and having sort of an ephemeral present time that represents what's going on, and that enjoy it or come back later and there'll be more.
And being able to record and then share that, because what it does is it allows you to kind of re-explore your images and the randomness of it as it interacts with the person who has the interest.
This was a passion project. You know, right now, you know, it has a custom WordPress plugin that kind of enforces the taxonomy of every post is in a key and a tempo. There's a limited number of tempos. It's 12 tempos, 12 keys, 144 different musical cultures emerging at different keys and tempos, or related things. You know, E flat is going to be full of metal, and there's going to be certain tempos with different kinds of metal in E flat. Anyway, it's a passion project, but it didn't validate on the lean product methodology, so it's on the back burner.
I see a lot of potential for it, and I think just with a little bit of tweaking, it could be a really fun thing.
You know what this synthesizer is? It's the OBX from 1978. It's like a big
one of the
big honkin' synthesizer. It's the one with the cards instead of the integrated circuits for the voices.
Wow.
So it's got discrete circuitry for each voice. And it has a strange effect where each note can randomly come out of the left or right speaker, or both. That's why it's got that weird... And the filter is so fat. I met the guys from The Good Guys. Mark from The Good Guys.
Place up in St. Paul?
Yeah, at the Maker Fair, and he said, we have these synthesizers we want people to come and play, so I brought my recorder, me and my friend Nico, I don't know if you know him, we recorded about an hour and a half, just random stuff on Zoberheim. So it was just an honor to play it, and it's such an amazing sounding synthesizer, so it's a big feature in these Good Guys posts. And so I have, for the Good Guys posts, I have these Maker Faire images. So I just took pictures of every booth at the Maker Faire and put them in this database. It ended up just being a big old art project. But, you know, eventually I'll have time to circle back and do something
with it.
Well,
I think if you're able to just basically figure out a way to allow it to
work on the free data of Twitter.
On Twitter, either a hashtag or links to a account.
Well, I think,
and then
the phone, it must be possible now to create an app that can detect key and tempo properly, which kind of wasn't the case 3 years ago. You know, for sure not 10 years ago when I was looking at this first. You know, I'm like, we have these data feeds with media in them. Oh, great, we can make a giant remix machine. But, like, to be able to have... That's what Jambots is. It was meant to be a toy, like a Furby or something, that would... I probably told you this already. It would listen to ambient... It would listen to the music in the environment, and it would learn songs. It would be able to detect the key and tempo. And so if it would hear something it recognizes, it would start to sing along or harmonize. If you had two of them and they were bored, they would teach each other songs.
Wow.
So it'd be something that you could just have sort of this musical learning happening in the presence of your children from a very early age, and then they would just naturally be singing along, sort of like a music database that helps them. Like if you see you hear a song on the radio, it's over and you have to wait to hear it again or whatever. But like this would be something where you could kind of just sit there, like some kids get hypnotized by repetition, and that's just part of the learning process.
Yeah, they have a deep. My daughter has certain ones that she wants to watch again and again.
And so that sounds like a natural form factor would be like a fuzzy toy that can learn songs and harmonize, and that would be like the ideal toy.
Yeah, and being able to link that to the nature of sound databases already being networked that we use on Pandora, just if. The simplicity of being able to identify a song and then being able to take that experience or to a further level would be interesting. Another possibility, again going with the ambient and random sound, is instead of going A B C D E F G, what you do is just continue out the alphabet and use octaves for letters and numbers, and then whatever the last letter of the hashtag is what the sets the one of the factors. So you could actually by manipulating a hashtag with just a slightly different spelling, you could do a variation on a theme.
It's weird that the numerology reduces things from 1 to 9, but then we're still dealing with
a 60
360
with a base 6.
Did you ever look at the Nova episode called The World's Oldest Computer? I think it was on the Antikythera mechanism as like a way it was like a model of the solar system. See, it would show the way the planets would. It had to do with the precession of the equinoxes. There's all these coincidences in the numbers that between the Earth and the Moon and the planets.
More support for simulator theory.
Yeah, like where did Archimedes learn about calculus, and how did he know how to make these brass gears? And he had articulated them so that Mercury would go into retrograde on schedule, so you could predict that shit off and just turn the wheel, and it's like he had to know that the sun was the center of the solar system. How could he make a machine that would simulate the the wanderers,
which is where the name planet comes from?
Yeah, the Jambot, that's probably my most, like, Shark Tank-level idea. So, anyone who wants to steal it, ideas come from the future. There's 1,000 radios receiving that signal, so even though I have a design for the Jambot, that someone has probably got very similar ideas already on the market. I haven't even looked. I'm kind of fatalistic about that stuff.
There's the idea space. Many people the steam engine was invented simultaneously, 6 different locations. Things come to be. It's a natural progression. It's all about a matter of application. And for me, the soul and backstory of it, I'm more willing to get into a product if I know that it's being made with good intention and not being made out of corporate need to satisfy stockholder expectations.
I think teaching kids music and ear training is that could only ever be beneficial in, a feeling of accomplishment and mastery of something. So like if you're immersed in music, you're already a master by 10 years old.
Exactly. I have my band with my daughter, the former teenage heartthrobs, and whenever music comes up, if I know who it is, I let Gemma know who the performer is and what the song is,
Mm-hmm. When I realized that there was such a thing as the Beatles and they had written all of the songs that I loved, I was just like, whoa. Yeah. So these guys, they go to, you know, they go to work, and that music comes out of the radio.
I asked my daughter today, what kind of music do you want? She's like, Zazu Zaz. You know, and but she goes, I want different Zazu Zaz. So that meant she wanted a different Cab Calloway song. The nice thing about Cab Calloway is that you can sing along with it even if you've never heard the song before, because it's, you know,
call and response.
And response. It interacts the audience. It gets everybody involved. It gets you participating, you know. And, you know, the song Zazu Zaz, Cab Calloway himself says, I don't know what it means, but it's got a very particular swing. Or peculiar swing. And it automatically makes you feel as part of the group, you know. And that's one of the good things that religion can give people, is a sense of belonging and a sense of group. Now, a lot of us independent thinkers were like, well, you know, we don't need it in that way for that reason. So we don't get the... unless we pursue it, we don't get the advantage of that feeling of group, because we are constantly questioning the group, because that's our job.
In Pokemon, you're kind of dependent on your location for your ability to have fun in the game.
Yeah.
And so some people are way out in the middle of nowhere, and they don't have any players nearby or any gyms or things. And so my thought was, to solve the asymmetrical population density problem of location games, is that you have sort of a telepresence version of it. So we'll go somewhere where it's fairly sparse, whatever, it's out on Highway 10, Elk River, Minnesota. And so now, if I'm in Elk River, I've got players in four directions of me, diagonally. And so, let's say I'll go to East Bethel. Whoops. Seems to be a dead end on the map there. Monticello? Yeah, there's Winstead. Okay, and then we get to the University of Minnesota. I don't know why that's there. It's Northfield is a ways down here. Stillwater. So, for each point on the map, there's four neighbors in each of the quadrants, and one of them is the closest. So you're always one map tile away from your closest player, whether it's a block away or the closest location. And so you're never... So as you build out your kingdom, anywhere where you have allied castles in an area, you can travel there. And then if you want to travel somewhere where there's not your team, then you have to battle. And you battle by climbing stairs, in my case. Now, the original location land game... It was meant so you take the latitude and longitude and use those as the seed number for randomized an array of randomized numbers that creates the entire castle. And so I upload a little thumbnail of the castle. The first time I do the geolocation on the map for the castle, it'll generate the castle and upload a thumbnail. But the actual data of the castle is created by its identifying latitude and longitude. And so... it takes a second on this whole... So, anyone who goes to this castle will have the same monsters and layout, as because that is the same seed number. So the location creates the geometry of the castle. And you can see this is an old version of what I'm doing now with the AR stuff. This is more of an isometric drawing. And so, let's see. I need to... Whoops, I think I got killed. Let me go back in. So I need to kill these dragons. They're pretty tough. So there'll be a lot of weak enemies or a few strong enemies. And then there's melee and so I can get armor and get a sword. Okay, now I'm in better shape. I should have done that before I fought the dragons. I can't leave until I kill everybody. So I wanted to have, you know, a randomly generated castle, but it's got to be something that the AI can inhabit and enjoy. Okay, there, I got healed. So it's just, like, the very minimal four-monster type setup.
You know what I always wonder in these games where they just have, you know, creatures kind of going around? What is the bathroom situation?
They're kind of like snakes. If you don't feed them, they don't need to go. So that was the original location land prototype, and that
I also like the application of it giving regional association. So it would be a way of you also getting perhaps a little bit roughly more familiar with the cities in your area.
The model is you'd get a subscription that allows you to have different types of traps or decorations on your castle, etc. Or you could spend it on bling for your avatar, because you kind of have these statues of yourself that you'll put at the castle, so that you can high customization and configuration value. But then you could also buy these teleports, so if you wanted to go and look at all the different staircases outdoors in Ireland, you could go and find who, you know, go work with your kingdom to tour around and install, you can collaborate with people. This one is, I just wanted to see how good I could get the desktop to work. These are just sprites, transparent PNG files. So I wanted to see, okay, how good could I do a fake tabletop, because
my mother actually we had a large plastic covered grid board that we used
dry erase.
Sharpies. We didn't have dry erase. Dry erase wasn't as ubiquitous at that point. It was like a wipeable wax crayon.
Almost
a grease pen.
Sure, okay, I dig it. Let me grab my graph paper tablet. I'll be back in 1 second.
Cult of the Month, where you belong.
Now, the flare medium is my weapon of choice. I don't know about you, but a simple dungeon with some rooms and passages. Brilliant.
There we go.
Brilliant. It's either E.T. or the President of the United States of America. Or both.
President E.T. They finally got rid of that alien law for Schwarzenegger, and then he came in and took it.
This one also has... So, as you draw... multi-touch creates rooms. It's always sort of a clockwise move, so if you need to do a right turn, you have to start at the upper left. So if I want to go here to here, I can have the hall. If I go through, it'll ignore. And so you can get a hand-drawn dungeon. But also, too, it's creating waypoints. For each gesture, there's two or three waypoints created. And those can be followed by these red creatures I can add to the environment. And so... why aren't they drawing? That's puzzling. Oh, wait, no. I need... So, that would be like a secret. So, anyway. Whoops. I'm doing this extremely sloppy, but it just goes to show it's pretty fast to
He's
to
building a world before my eyes.
Yeah, and so you'd think for AI it might be difficult to... say if you had a long series of rooms and one last room at the end, is the AI ever going to get there? Let's see. We had the blue ones. And so the blue one is leaving a trail on these waypoints. And so all he's concerned with is nearby waypoints that he can access. And so a room has a waypoint in the middle, and then at the corners, passages have waypoints in the elbow and at the ends. And so the blue character is sort of, he's exhausting all those waypoints, but he's leaving behind this redness, and so he's avoiding the redness, and so he's not going to double back. He's going to move forward to where there's more whiteness. And so when he's all the whiteness that's left is in that little last dead-end room. And so he's going to find every last waypoint in this map because he's just sort of procedurally trying stuff out. And he's naturally going to explore this side corridor just because it's the whitest place he can find. Now, you can have multiple ones and they'll tend to avoid each other.
Because they know to avoid the heat spots.
Sometimes they get in sync. That's one problem with this AI form is they can get in sync. Well, the red ones operate differently. The red ones, they're sort of the predators, and they're consuming red spots, and they'll kill a blue one if the blue one is sitting on the spot. Not very good graphics, but so he's trying to get all the red, and he leaves it clean. And so the blue ones will tend to follow him. But he's eventually going to track them down and kill them. So it makes the pathfinding and of the artificial intelligence much easier because the gestures that created the dungeon create a valid path that they can kind of count, leave. It's like a scent marker or something, yeah. Or heats. I guess monsters can see dwarf footprints.
Yeah, that would be a great approach for it.
So, yeah, and then there's this could be very easily visualized, and I wanted it to look like that tabletop dice type of thing, but have, like, okay, now you have 100 elf figures. You don't just have two. You know?
There might also be an interest in being able to share this with your players, but what they do is they get the first-person perspective of it.
You could have the dungeon master has the tablet and they're signed into the same game, and then there's maybe a tabletop view on the television. And then each of the players has their own
their character sheet.
Yeah, their character sheet, and has all their action controls and their spells and stuff. And so it's playing out on the table, and then the dungeon master can kind of handle any read the monsters and the non-player characters.
They're the director. They're leading it
and
through.
And then also too, if you could give people perks for writing dialogue, and so that you could have like a story that would just the characters and the sketches of them. And the stories that they tell could all be sort of modularized into this sort of a like a Minecraft, but you're creating artificial intelligence instead of little castles.
Yeah, you could create your own storybook at the end. Well,
it gets deep when you try to think of the elements of the story.
For kids, it's a storybook.
One thing about my stair climbing game is it excludes people who aren't in good enough health to exercise. Some people have problems with their joints or their back or what they have mobility problems. So I thought that the workaround would be that if they would gain progress in the game by writing. Yeah. And so that there'd be like an interactive fiction repository at each location. So if the mom just wanted to sit in the car and write, and then the kids could climb the stairs to create the castle.
Being able to give an opportunity for people to use it how they want to is always fun.
The problem with this in researching the market is Dungeons & Dragons has over 100 video games, so it's like even seeing what the hell they've done is daunting. I mean, that idea of having one tablet, four phones, a big television, all of a sudden there's no limit to how many orcs can be in the cavern, and that was always the thing when I was a kid. It's like I wish I had bought the Dungeon Dwellers set for $30 in 1982, but I didn't have the forethought.
My mother crafted out of balsa wood little figurines of our initial characters. My first one was a magic user. And I remember killing a wraith, and the only reason it was able to die was because I had a silver dagger.
I think I showed you this at one of the Rocket Network events. This is here's the boards. Airship Garage, you can select, right now I have my bank maxed out just for testing purposes, but you would have some constraint in your batteries, solar panels, hydrogen fuel cells that stores hydrogen. Oh wait, no, a hydrogen fuel cell is, oh, that generates power. Engines generate forward thrust. So we can leave everything maxed out. It doesn't matter. And then I don't know if I think music and sound effects aren't on. I was just playing with the UX. Then you can change your different Kraftwerk. Nice. Electric Light Orchestra.
Blind Melon.
Blind Melon. Okay. Purple Rain. Nice. Rest in peace. Rasta, Led Zeppelin.
Did you hear how Led Zeppelin got their name?
That Keith Moon thought they would go over like a Led Zeppelin?
Yeah, that should go over like a Led Zeppelin. I don't know if it was Keith Moon, but yeah.
So I have, as in this landscape, there's imagine a bunch of waves going at different frequencies and amplitudes, and then those create the scenery. So
I was contemplating this actually on my way over here, and I wrote down a note, and what I was thinking, a great application of this would be to kind of be able to follow and explore through music in a physical dynamic, to kind of figure out a way to achieve a interactive state of flow with music. And the idea of with this kind of parallax view,
it's 2D reduction of complexity.
And it for me, it was very kind of evocative of the dynamic of what I love about opera sets and the aesthetic influence that opera sets have on that kind of parallax.
The art, okay, so there's just so much complexity in the natural world. How do you reduce that and express it? Now, this form of art where I'm redrawing the entire scene 60 times per second, and like I wipe it clean and redraw everything generatively. And so each tree is waving, but you'll see that like the sky is a gradient, right? But that gradient is being recalculated 60 times per second. So it's going from day to night. And these clouds go from small to big, but with like a very simple geometry. You know how calculating clouds, it's like you could just, your phone will catch on fire normally. So I wanted to have clouds I could generate that would go from nothing to complexity. So I did some studies on how this is actually the more simplified cloud. It's basically just a hack of the wave formula. So the wave isn't actually a fractal. It's got two segments. And so it goes from nothing, like goes from 0 to 1 in height, but it's also continuously got this crest that's, I don't know. I'm just absolutely obsessed with, geometry and iteration. I'm colorblind, so, playing with color digitally is really interesting to me, because I can't even enjoy, like, as we go further on. Actually, do I need to turn on my batteries, get some more power going once the wind gets higher? So what the thing just turned out to not be that fun to manage your hydrogen fuel cells. So as a game, it's sort of Yeah, I kind of completed it, but it's just not a fun game. So it's just, I would want to go through and redo everything about it in a sense. But then I kind of, like, not until I figure out what's supposed to be fun about it.
With some of these games, what I've discovered is that it's the, it's the stick and carrot, as you get better.
Intermittent reinforcement.
And
mounting challenges.
It's hard to get a consensus joy on that because it's so kind of arbitrary. There's so many of those games out there.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was able to have this kind of interactivity playing through the music that was on my phone.
Oh, sort of an interactive visualizer.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting into the fourth ecosystem now. This is the Coastal Redwoods.
It's so sweet.
And they are indeed fractal.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's all, canvas drawing. You have Bezier curves and gradients. That's pretty much, and lines and fills. But so it's like, those are like the simple tools, but it's like having, there's several colors that create the architecture. Like, so there's, white, black, a couple shades of green, there's water, sky. And so every single color that's used in the scene is a pair of colors. So I point sampled gradients. And so there's six different color palettes that represent, that happen every 4 hours.
Nice.
And so you can see we're getting into the evening. And so white things will look different. The clouds will look different. We might get into a storm eventually. So now we're up in the mountains. And for each ecosystem, there's a sort of a generative algorithm that creates a architecture, too. So there's, like, in the hills, there's these modernist homes. In the Badlands, there's sort of these adobe or ruins, like the Gila ruins. Then there's, the coastal buildings and stuff. And so, yeah, there's seven different ecosystems. Eventually you'll see the moon come up. I took special care with the water. And so then from this idea, once I bailed on the actual game design, I started working on a thing called Canvas Coder, which would say if you wanted to just program trees, it would be a social network where instead of tweeting, you would upload code that would draw a tree. So you could have a game that would subscribe to a curated feed of trees. So every day you played the game, there'd be different graphics, different sets of graphics, different architecture, all generated by code. So people are learning JavaScript to hack this world and populate it with their creation.
That would be interesting, especially if you can find a way to make it approachable. Too often whenever things are involve code, you have to have the knowledge of code.
Well, my thought would be to have... there'd be like an ever, like a casual game, but there's this ever-present edit button, and it kind of leads you down a path saying, oh, okay, I can configure things about where I'm at and what I'm doing right now. Then, oh, I can look at all the animals. I can choose different animals.
Yeah.
Or, okay, I can open that animal up and change its color. And then all of a sudden you can drill down until you're looking at code and go, oh, that's why that thing is afraid of mice, because it's in this code, and I can change it to say it loves mice, and then all of a sudden the game goes cattywampus. And so that you kind of, you want to, like, for people who like to break things and hack things and grief people, like, make that the, like, oh, I want to do something that's going to puzzle people and frustrate them. All of a sudden, you're coding and collaborating with your fellow trolls to be reptilians in this world where all the incarnated souls are trying to do good, you know what I mean? So it's like, just sort of like a novelty generator that ultimately, if you really want to fuck shit up, you got to learn to code.
One of the, when I buy my pinball games through the pinball arcade, many of them have, you can pay extra for pro mode, which allows you to do
level creator?
Well, it allows you to open the coin door. So you suddenly have access to the to the to the game as a owner of a machine would.
Oh, okay.
So you could actually go in there and reprogram the display name on it, the settings, the difficulties, the number of balls on it. I'm going to be doing a curated kind of coverage of the Addams Family pinball machine. It's the most popular one. There are 21,000 of them made.
Mamushka.
And it's just a great machine. And what story of
it's hard to get the multi ball, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, and the story of it is you're going through the different rooms of the Addams Family Mansion, and the wizard mode is in fact called Tour the Mansion. So the idea of this show is to take a person on almost a first-person perspective tour of the machine and go through the different areas and modes in a story mode. That way, when you play it as a pinball game, you know where the story is going and you know how to navigate the game better and have a greater familiarity. That way you can have an opportunity to get to that wizard mode. And one of the ways of getting to being able to get there is by being able to get it into a machine and change like the basic fundamentals of it. So, you know, while you have it on 7 balls and plenty of extra balls, that way you have the opportunity to, on one game, be able to do all these different things and fully experience the story outside of the pressure of the 3-ball environment. And then eventually, as you get more and more skilled, you can trick it back so you can actually have a true honest game where you have the 3 balls, you have the restrictions, and you're able to play through it and then master that game and fully experience that game.
There's a game called Shadow of the Colossus, and there's a whole bunch of people who decompiled it and explored every model and a weird parts of the world that were sort of off to the side and inaccessible. I don't know if you've ever played it, but
it's a fascinating game. I've limited my gaming to pinball, but I understand it because last Saturday I was reading the a PDF of the manual that came with the gold edition Addams Family pinball machine that explained all the menus and sub menus and what it did. And it gave me a deeper kind of intrinsic knowledge and terminology for that particular machine. So it was like super liner notes.
Let's see. We looked at the AR code. We looked at the squid
ball.
But
the idea of being able to fly this through my music, even if it was just a visualizer, would be fascinating. And then adding a game element to it, all the better. And part of me was imagining flying this through an opera that has the lyrics and also the subtitles as well. So
you'd be kind of on like a Disney car experience,
yeah,
where you're going
through the
different parts of the Disney thing,
yeah,
but it'd be virtual and it would be on some opera.
For example, yeah, the idea of being a person being able to turn on and off different types of informational tracks is kind of key to my Shutterbooks approach of teaching. The idea of a Shutterbook is it's like an ebook. Let's say you had we're doing Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. You select the Shutterbooks app. You select the work, and every work has its own animus, its curator, its caretaker, its narrator, which you can change as they become available. And let's say we're doing The Raven, I would use like a scholarly uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And you select the book, the narrator starts on the page, you have larger than average text, and there's a slight glow that kind of follows along with it. Appropriate to whatever the work happens to be. Something for as small as The Raven, this is appropriate. And let's say you get to the line, and then the raven perched upon the bust of Pallas above my chamber door. But you don't have any idea who Pallas is. So what you can do is touch the word Pallas, and no matter where the narrator is, it goes to a interrupting subroutine and goes, oh yes!
And then okay, so it sort of humanizes it. I like your idea of having it be sort of contextualized as having a digital guide.
One of my...
Have empathy for where you're at and how you're experiencing it. Would try to adjust its teaching
you
method to your...
For what in the way of lo-fi referred to as one of the points of resolution, and that's where art meets its audience, and you design for how that moment will be. Because it's kind of the, for me, it's the artistic equivalent of the Bruce Lee's one inch punch.
Mm-hmm.
You're putting all your force into this tiny little moment and you have maximum impact. And what I like to do is, and this is where I take a kind of Jackie Chan approach. I use what's there and our audience is what's there. So one of the reasons that comics work so well in teaching people is that it cannot progress without the user. The story won't go forward, unlike a video where it'll just play whether you're in the room or not. A comic will not advance until the person experiencing it forwards it.
That makes sense.
And if you on the application of the Wikipedia YouTube interface, which is something that I want to play with, if you could have a simple way that if people could positively reinforce the connection or neutral that way, bad information just doesn't get populated because it's repeated. If that makes sense, because if somebody happens to follow a link to a video that has mostly good ideas, but has like something bad in it, that bad link will be getting reinforced along with everything
else.
Oh,
just like when you're like, oh, is that the trail up to the cliff? And it's like, no, that's where 18 people went and turned around and came back.
Yeah. That way, you know, they'll sign up like, you know. And also kind of giving the heads up. That way people are going into these videos with a little bit more knowledge because, you know, here's this video. Here's what people thought, you know. And having to be a little bit more mindful than the YouTube comments would just be a blessing. I've actually disabled YouTube comments for the most part simply because, well, YouTube comments. And if you want to make a comment on my thing, come over to my Patreon page and pay me $1 a month and I can hear how I am whatever derivative term they're trying to use to insult us these days.
Yeah, Google's got some broken things in their, you know, the way they treat people. Like, you know, I have this game Railroad Train, right? So you type the exact string that's the name of my app in the App Store into the search box.
Yeah.
I'm like on the 7th page. I'm the 47th result because 46 people have paid for my keywords, railroad and train. And then, you know, maybe people have paid armies of people to rate and review automatically, you know, and so it's like 46 people are doing better than me, but this is a search company. I type in my exact string into the search box and I'm on the 7th page. That's a little bit broken.
Well, and it's the nature of language and time, whoever got to it first.
Well, their business is those 46 people, not me.
Exactly.
But that's fine. The good news is all I have to do is outspend them. And, you know.
Well, one, I thought of a fantastic application of that would be to be able to curate and look at, in either on the phone or in VR, classic subways of graffiti art, being able to really kind of curate that. Imagine being able to sit down on a bench in New York, in a New York subway, as just these rolling pieces of classic art just roll past you.
Like someone should be automatically scanning train cars.
Well, I think there's probably a database out there. I think it'll just be a matter of finding that connection and going, hey, but I have a train car simulator. Let's recreate, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be
I know I'd watch that movie.
There's going to be a new version of... Now, here's those... you can see how the waves kind of progress. There's like a wave on top of the wave.
Nice.
And so it's not fractal like the Japanese... wave painting.
I'm really in love with this aesthetic. Also, I have a deep love of the animation and work of Terry Gilliam.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of an emotional, better imaging. You know, you have a higher visual fidelity, but because it's pure math, it has a starkness that is evocative beyond its representation.
And there's not many forms of art where you can reel through gradients and apply them to your primitives
and
real time. And then, you know, if you zoom out, that zooms time too. Get the HUD out of there. So yeah, I mean, I feel like this has been, like I kind of imagined it and coded it, you know. It's like it should be like this. I want to be able to do this and generate landscapes and buildings and things just based on these sine waves that essentially create all the instances of everything. But as I said, I feel like I've succeeded technically in the graphics display, but my game design is poor. I mean, I'm interested in hybrid power zeppelins.
Yeah.
You know, but the backstory is it's the year 2024 and coastal cities have been flooded and the last remnants of humanity have taken refuge in rooftop bars, surviving on fine wine and delicious appetizers. And then, but they need someone to deliver goods to the party, basically. So these Zeppelin messengers bring the wine. Yeah, the last 1% of the human population.
To be honest, it's why I'm heavily invested in dirigible technology.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, if I just already had $10 million, I would just make a electric. Yeah, I like to say safe hydrogen.
Yeah.
It's like clean coal. But like, you know, it would be so romantic to go down in literal flames. I feel like the way I want to die, if I can't be eaten by a tyrannosaur or nuked, I'd like to have some type of electrical malfunction that electrocutes me and then a hydrogen explosion. And then I'd fall several hundred feet, crash through the ice and be eaten by a giant squid while I'm clawing at the ice.
So you're going for full annihilation.
Well,
you want to make sure that it's done as spectacular as possible.
Just as many wacky ways to die.
You just want to make sure that a photocopy of or a scan of the newspaper article explaining the multi-part nature of your annihilation is preserved.
I just think that, you know,
I respect it. It's you know, it's
caldera explosion is probably gonna get me.
Yeah,
that or I'll be found at the bottom of a staircase with a crazy app open.
I'm hoping to get to the point where I'll have a robot body backup, you know, and
Bruce Willis in that.
That
movie.
Dealing with the fragility of humanity, and the rampant of technology, it only makes sense that we would start to be able to replicate ourselves.
Do you play guitar?
No.
What do you play?
Theremin. I play weird instruments, things that I build. Soundboard is my preferred instrument. I appreciate musicians and their ability to enter into a state of flow while they play. For me, I guess my biggest musical instrument would be a pinball machine.
Here's a soundboard I put together from some crazy DVD I got at the Christian thrift store.
NASA had lost control of at least 3 genetic experiments.
Nice.
We are placed in this world as in a great theater where the sources and causes of every event are entirely concealed.
This is beautiful.
Talk about spies up in NASA. They've been working very closely with the National Security Agency and the CIA and other spy agencies.
You know, a friend of mine works
NASA
for the Radio
and
Network
lost control
Alex
of at least
Jones
three genetic experiments.
Network. And if I had this and just a few more things, I believe I could actually be an online guest, and they would not know that I was working completely off of all.
Oh yeah, you have some more, like,
might have been
just more wiggle words.
Yeah, happy to be
Ebonic
here. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Entities, you know, that they came in contact.
Couple confirmations, and you know.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that. I'll tell you off the air.
Exactly.
But why would NASA allow such gruesome, ghastly experiments? Has to be something with occultism. NASA had somehow opened the gateway of evil, and
nice,
that evil spirits had come through.
This is beautiful.
And farmers and ranchers and doctors and lawyers began to see these. They call them the chupacabra, the goat suckers.
Nice.
The X-rated books with their brown paper covers or whatever they send you in the mail when you order that, if you ever did. I've just heard that.
Want this app as a guest. This would be the also a great way of formatting a talk show co-host. You know, you're at your own personal Ed McMahon. You know, that way, if you're doing a podcast or a radio show,
sitting ready,
you'd have your
up into space.
Yeah, I liked that guy that Craig Ferguson had.
Exactly.
That was pretty wicked.
One of the experiments was to bring spiders up into space and to weave webs by these spiders.
I actually remember watching that experiment, and those webs were weird.
Let me show you a good instrument for... a good instrument that doesn't require any instrumental knowledge. This is this one is defunct. The audio shell I used for the app is no longer available.
Actually, I have this one.
You do not have this.
Yeah.
You do not. Where did you get this? You just found it?
You have to remember, I was an early iPhone adopter, and whenever instruments came out,
Well, thank you. I hope you bought the in-app purchase. But yeah, it doesn't work on the current operating system. It broke at 11.
Okay.
So I gotta republish this, and I also have a keyboard learning game.
Because what I've always wanted to do is combine surf guitar and country and industrial.
I don't have this upgraded. I can't play the cool instruments. So we're in the key of D here, and so if you play the ones with the markers on them, those are the notes just outside the key. So if you need to do a key change, no, that's the most flattering thing I've ever seen. If someone found my app without me, like, forcing them to.
Yeah, I actually have his app on here. Yeah,
unbelievable. Well, Elvis Canaveral, thanks so much for.
It's been a great pleasure
for hanging out. Can I play you a song?
Please do.
All right. Check 1, 2, and 2. This is one of two songs I wrote this year. I think there was quite a break before that. A little bit of background. I think it's Lowry. It was also called Highway 93.
Okay.
Northrop King is one of those old buildings where they have the Art of World.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My wife actually works in the California building.
Nice. I want to work in the Casket building.
Casket Arts.
Yeah, and Marshall Street goes up along the river. Let's build a wall around Northeast Minneapolis, from Marshall Street, Highway 93, to keep out the bourgeoisie. Art Mafia, the Northrop King, support the bands kickstarting. Guitar players from City Sound will let that money trickle down to Psycho Susie's serving girls who spend it all at the Art of Whirl. Our utopia is self-sustained, so put your credit cards away. Take all your money and peddle that pub up 94 back to Bumfuck. We'll be fine when you're gone. You can get your culture from Amazon. One-click ordering now is on. Let's build a wall around Northeast Minneapolis, from Marshall Street, Highway 93, to keep out the bourgeoisie. Keep out the bourgeoisie.
Very nice, very nice. Bravo, bravo.
Thank you, thank you.